This week, the NASDAQ closed at a new bull market record, while black gold soared to the highest point in months. Your host, Chris Waldseck, it's just great to be with you. We have two big guests for you, as usual, including Joseph Grosso, president of Golden Arrow Resources, a major gold explorer. Recent drill results from his company suggest big things. The Chinchillas property is a young and growing prospect with big opportunity and potential. They've partnered up with major producer Silver Standard, and expect big things, even fireworks, in the next 6 to 8 months. Then Arch Crawford returns to the show. We discuss the Metropolitan Plan, where major players may be positioning themselves for negative interest rates in the United States. Yes, you heard that right. It's occurring all over the world. China, 3.7% negative rates for big players. And in Sweden, the EU, and the Bank of Japan as well. Could it come to the U.S.? Well, some really sharp folks with deep pockets seem to think so. And we now have a new voicemail for you to record your questions and comments. We have a phone hotline, 641-715-3900. We'd like for you to jot this down, please, on a post-it near your phone, or perhaps even plug it right into the phone. The number again, 641-715-3900. And you'll need an extension number for our mailbox. Easy to remember, 5140-49. Again, 5140-49. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. And if you haven't signed up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter, don't forget to do so. This week, we've got several big opportunities ranging from penny stocks, energy companies, Bitcoin opportunities, as well as the precious metals. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Cloudy weather appeared over the precious metals. Although the U.S. dollar was under considerable pressure, the threat of a rate hike looming in December caused some players to take some profits. By Friday's close, the yellow metal was off only $24, finishing at $13.17, less than 2%. Silver fell about 60 cents, 3%. The XAU shares finished off about $1.76, 1.8%, closing at $94, still above solid support, all of the sectors in the weekly charts. West Texas Intermediate crude, as I mentioned earlier, blasted higher, nearly $4, just above $48.24 per barrel. That's nearly 9% in a single week. I've been forecasting 70 to 75 against considerable resistance, and so far we are spot on from under $30, and the CRB is a major component there. The top story impacting the precious metals sector, news of stronger than expected U.S. core inflation. Fed policymakers follow the PCE index closely. That's their stated preferred inflation barometer. It increased 1% in the last 12 months. The Fed watches that number closely, but they also watch core inflation, which is inching towards their concern level at about 1.7%. So it looks as though the Fed still will pull the trigger on another quarter point rate hike, no sooner though than the first or second meeting following the November presidential election, so maybe December or early 2017. Nevertheless, the U.S. dollar still sagged on Friday, which seems counterintuitive, possibly due to consumer spending, which was unchanged in the latest reading. In related news, the Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen gave testimony before the House on Wednesday, before the Financial Services Committee. The Fed governors have left few clues, but did hint that they're unlikely to move rate till after the election. The recent increase in consumer confidence and tame unemployment numbers seem to give the Fed all the room they need to raise rates in December, which I do think will probably come to pass as long as the elections go smoothly. Precious metals, bottom line. The U.S. dollar remains under resistance, still building what appears to be a bearish head and shoulders, and although some profit taking could be in the cards in the next few weeks, the precious metals trend appears to be intact. And my favorite proprietary sentiment index suggests that this could be just the opening salvo of a major bull market in the precious metals. Zero signs of waning momentum have appeared on this forward-looking contrarian indicator. I expect a key buy signal likely in the next few weeks. My Alpha Stocks newsletters will be the first to know, and we'll post that immediately on the subscriber webpage. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly sunny skies over the New York Stock Exchange as investors turn to U.S. equities amid jitters from the EU Deutsche Bank fiasco. Shares of Deutsche Bank briefly fell to the lowest level on record Friday as global markets got their first whiff that clients had been pulling out funds. But by market close, shares had rebounded sprightly on the strongest volume spike I could find in years, perhaps in history, suggesting a bottom may be in place. The Dow Jones Industrials added 47 for the week, ending at 18,308. The S&P added 21 at 2168, while the NASDAQ blasted to yet another all-time record bull market high, 6 points, a fractional move, finishing at 5312. In related news, some positive news from J.P. Morgan, which estimated its fine from the Justice Department would be much smaller than expected. Of course, healthy financial sector improves overall robustness of U.S. equities as the shares tend to lead the markets higher and lower. Bottom line on Wall Street, the NASDAQ close at a record high is clearly impressive, and our fear to greed index is in neutral territory, suggesting that new highs can unfold in the coming weeks. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. Arch Crawford combines technical analysis with the planetary alignments. Arch has been at the helm of Crawford Perspectives for several decades. Welcome back, Arch Crawford.
Delighted to be here. Thank you. We just saw a solar eclipse on September 1st. Which was in negative or difficult aspect to three outer planets. We get the lunar side of it Friday, the lunar eclipse. We're having the lunar eclipse, and then we're having the FOMC announcement, and then we're having the station of Mercury. Now, it'll be going back forward, and I suspect we will have a dump before we get to that. So that'll be the 21st or 22nd. Now, the 21st, I think, 22nd is the fall equinox. I once did a study, I think it was from 1928 to 1992, down percent moves in the S&P and put them around the calendar dates. Two-thirds of the biggest down days occur in one-third of the calendar year, and that one-third is 4 months, and it's centered on the fall equinox. There are two ways to look at it. One is the ecliptic, plane of the ecliptic, which is the sun's apparent path, and the other is the equatorial, which is expansion of our own equator onto the stars. About the galactic center, I have done some studies with the passage of planets through that degree of the longitude versus the Dow Jones Industrial Average. For many, many years going back, tops and bottoms in the market with different planets at the galactic center. One year it'll be a little to the left, one year it'll be a little to the right, and another year it won't be anywhere close. And the average is exactly on the galactic center. I think it's close to, it may be different as different angles to the galactic center where we're out on the edge. That we are not going to measure. In any regular, even a nation's lifetime.
Exactly. So what you're really referring to here is when the planets are in a particular alignment with the galactic center. Of course, they revolve much more quickly than we do around the galaxy.
We get one shot of the Sun, Venus, and Mercury for a year. Sometimes we get two with Mercury and Venus if they're retrograding. But usually it's one pass of the Sun, usually one of Mars, but also that can happen that you get three, I guess. It has to be one or three. It goes through it, back across it, and then forward again. Rarely. But the general calculations were done on conjunction or the middle conjunction, I guess it was. I'm not sure. Mars would hit it conjunct every 2 years, and then Jupiter every 12 years, and Saturn every 27 or 28 years. I measured Sun and Mars primarily.
All right, on the precious metals, which at least up until recently, the best in 30, 40 years from bear market lows. Do you think the bear market is in the rear view mirror?
Let me comment on the general market trends, because today is so important and this moment is so important. And then I'd love to go to gold. I love gold. All three of the major indices are holding at their November highs before it went down in January, February, and then came all the way back up and higher. and they're back down on top of those highs. Dow Jones came right back down to a moderately long-term trend line up from February and June, and it touched on it yesterday and bounced, and it has not yet broken that. On the S&P, it's not down near the trend line yet, but it did stop exactly on the November high yesterday and today. The NASDAQ 100 actually broke one trend line, and there is still another one a little further out. It's broken both of them yesterday, day before yesterday, I guess it was. And it bounced right up off of the 50-day moving average. I think it closed below it on Friday. Yesterday it went further down and then closed well above it. And today it is right back exactly on where the intermediate trend line meets the 50-day moving average, on supporting it right this minute. But I think with the things that are coming up, I don't think the Fed is going to be able to stop things. They have their announcement, which I think it's next Wednesday, but that's when we get into Friday's lunar eclipse and the Mercury station and all these things. I don't think it's going to be a happy time.
You've made some great points, and I can see that on the charts. There have been many swoons in the past few years, and then we just recently hit a brand new high. Basically, all three indices, you can have sharp sell-offs all you want, but until the trend changes, the weekly and monthly trend, each sell-off is a buying opportunity.
You know, right last August, before the sharp drop that was because of the Chinese markets, I've never done this in my 40 years of doing the newsletter. I said to the puts run out, the options run out on Friday. You can buy the puts for this week and let them run out on Friday, and I see a huge potential from the stars. I said, if you lose money, don't tell people online that I told you to do it. It took that dive, and there was a profit of 1,084 Dow points.
You know, that's one of the neat things about being a seller, is that you tend to be right quickly and you tend to be right in a big way. Basic mechanics of any bull market, sell-offs come abruptly and they're very powerful and forceful. The real money is always, in a bull market, is always made on the upside. So I wonder if you could give our listeners an idea of when you think the bottom, what signs they should be looking for.
On the front page of my newsletter, August 29, the September letter, I have the 52-week New York Stock Exchange new highs, 10-day average, and they were rising nicely, rising nicely, rising nicely, and they spiked up to the 13th of July, and since then they have dropped back sharply. So it was a spike up and then a loss, got up to the area where we've had significant intermediate highs going way back. I always said, okay, go back 200% short ASAP on Monday the 29th of August. We have not yet broken significant support. We broke the minor support of the flat that it was making for the last month and a half, almost 2 months. We broke that flat, and as you say, that's not a real big deal unless it turns into something worse. And with the planet stuff coming up, the eclipse stuff coming up, none of the Dow Jones, the S&P, the NASDAQ 100 have closed below their trend lines going back to the February bottom. So the game is still afoot.
Conan Doyle. That's a good segue, I think, into another question I had for you today. It's an interesting rumor, but it's maybe a bit more than a rumor, circulating through the blogosphere about a meeting that took place actually just outside of New York by some really top folks. You might think of it as the Jekyll Island meeting from the early 1900s. The topicality involved the dollar eventually, or I should say interest rates in the U.S. eventually following the same course as that of the BOJ and the ECB to negative territory. Porter Stansberry, their service has this really written up quite well for listeners. I'll be sure and put a link up. An executive, I mean a really top executive from a big company that I just happened to bump into a couple of times this year, outside the gold industry, actuarial field, brought this to my attention. He said, you really need to tell your listeners, this is what people are anticipating. They're bracing for the Fed to do an about-face, shock everyone, and take rates negative, which would crush the dollar. Right now, it's the only go-to currency. And, of course, it would send the metals into orbit.
they're going to drop the rate?
Yeah, drop the rates into negative territory. The actual, the tangible rate, I mean, our FOMC benchmark overnight lending rate. So, and they're talking about instead of going to 0.75, or even if they do go to 0.75, it's going to be an abrupt turnaround in order to hold up the economy. And it might stem from circumstances surrounding November.
Well, the stuff online that I've been seeing coming across pretty steadily is saying September the 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year for the U.S., and there may be some very hostile back and forth between the Democrats and Republicans about the current administration to say what the rates are going to be for another 6 months. And the Republicans are not going, maybe they'll go, enough of them will go along with it to do it, maybe not. But I noticed that the 10-year rate right now is up exactly to a trend line off three highs in March, April, and May of this year. It's right there right now at 1.74, and that's been up from about 152 or 153. The long-term, intermediate to long-term, I had a chart in a letter a couple of months ago showing the 10-year rate for very long periods of time, and it's been in a steady downtrend for years, and even a very clear downtrend channel. And it has to go above 2.5 or 3.0 and then 3.0 to turn the long-term trend. So I'm saying that whatever they say, they're going to put us into negative in the next crisis. The Americans are not ready to accept that.
Think of the implications for the U.S. dollar to be essentially walked off the plank. The USS Fed, I mean, it would be game over. Inflation, people would be scurrying around trying to figure out what to do. Now, of course, I guess it would be bad news for the financials as well, which are really like that spread, you know, the differential between the real rate and the current interest rate.
They're up against resistance now on the rate, unless they do. The thing is, the planetary stuff is saying a surprise move is very possible or more possible than most months. But which way it will be is so mixed that I'm just as confused as everybody else. If they will raise it, if they'll lower it, try to shock the system in some other way. But, you know, I don't trust the Fed. You know, when the Depression was getting going pretty good, they did things that made it worse, and I think they were doing for the benefit of the big banks to take over the small banks, and they say, oh, well, we made a mistake then.
Arch, could you please tell people more about the precious metals sector? My guess is you have some interesting thoughts there.
In the newsletter, we bought gold at 258 on a Jupiter-Neptune trine in April of 2001. And we stayed long most of the way up to the tops, trading it off a couple of times and getting back in, but not a lot. We didn't trade it a lot. We stayed mostly long up to near the top. And we've stayed generally out of it since we went short twice. We went long twice and were quickly stopped out. And we have not liked it since, until it broke up out of the long-term downtrend channel. And it did that around, I think, around 1245 or 1240 back in January, February. And we've been very positive about it since then. And, of course, it's still in a very solid uptrend on the intermediate level, although it has been sideways to slightly lower since early July. I think the early July high at 1377.50 is the high so far, and then we had a lower high in early August and a lower high in early September. We are trending lower, but it's in actually a triangle for the last 3 or 4 weeks. It needs to break up above, if it hits 1360 on the upside, it'll be very bullish. If it hits 1315, 1310 on the downside, it could be negative. I wouldn't like to see it break 1290 on the downside in particular. A lot of things are triangulating right now. The gold, the dollar, and the oil are all in triangle patterns.
I'm sure you're watching the CRB, which has shown
highs and the higher lows, yeah.
Not only that, but holding solidly above that 200-period moving average in the weekly chart. It just keeps holding that support, as is gold. Could be, I think, a positive current for precious metals.
Whatever troubles might be coming around September 30th, the battles over the debt ceiling and things like that, next year's budget, could drive gold higher. The technical account from after when it broke out from 1245 or somewhere around in there, my technical account was 1440, and I still think it'll make that.
It's been such a sharp advance. I think upward momentum could surprise folks, but I'm with you. I'd like to see a breakout, you know, above that 1377 and a solid close on a weekly basis. Any other topicality you'd like to leave with the listening audience?
In terms of difficulty with the elections, when the parties are particularly bitter, it's been bad for the stock market. And it hasn't been this time, and I think that's because the stock market has been manipulated upside by people trying to help very, very powerful Wall Street.
Several of our guests, such as Louis Navalier, have suggested that by keeping rates incredibly low, corporations can issue their debt at a very low cost and then purchase their shares, which have a very high dividend rate relative to the debt expense. A win-win-win scenario, gaming the system, putting up their shares, adding to their bottom line by having that rate differential between the bonds they've issued and the stock dividends they're receiving, then reducing the float, the shares outstanding, on the New York Stock Exchange. An excellent recipe for a runaway bull market to new highs. Please tell people more about Crawford Perspectives and how they can get in touch.
Well, they can Google Arch Crawford is the best, most simplest way to get to our website. You can put it crawfordperspectives.com, and that is a lot of letters. It's easy to get to, and there's a lot of interesting things on it, and there'll be a link to this interview. And the other thing, we predicted beforehand, the week before, we said the U.S. will be at war around the end of the 7th or 8th of September 2001. That was quite a shock to people. I do not know of any other person or organization that had that prediction, except those guys that bought the airline puts, and we never heard what happened with them. Well, I know the guy that owned it doubled the insurance 6 months before, and he had asbestos in the building up to about the 70th floor. That was going to be a difficult demolition. There was a big meeting in New York on it this last weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with all kinds of engineers, and Paul Craig Roberts was advertising it. He was speaking there.
Thank you so much for making time for us, sir.
Superb. Thank you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Joseph Grosso, Executive Chairman, CEO, and President of Golden Arrow Resources Corporation. Headquartered in Vancouver, Canada, Golden Arrow is an explorer and prospect generator focused on identifying, acquiring, and advancing precious metal discoveries. A member of the Grosso Group, a management company specialized in resource exploration, and at the helm, welcome back, Mr. Grosso.
What a great introduction. I am very humbled. Thank you, Chris. Feel very comfortable with your audience.
Well, it's very kind of you to say. You have a very interesting flagship property, the Chinchillas Project. It's funded by major silver producer Silver Standard. You've just announced a key advance in mine permitting. Apparently, we'll facilitate this partnership with Silver Standard. I know you have all kinds of interesting minutiae and details for our listening audience today.
Chris, fire away. I'm bursting with enthusiasm, and I'm calling you, or you calling me, in Argentina, Buenos Aires, what we call, in a loving way, BA, Big Apple. It's the Big Apple of South America, but it's very small compared to the Big Apple, which I was about 3 weeks ago, the great New York. What a fabulous city. I could move there anytime. But meantime, I'm in Argentina. Argentina is just, the spring has just arrived. The flowers are flowering. The panorama is fantastic. And what's happening with the project is most exciting, most exciting. If you would permit me, I would like to give you a very quick tour that I think that your listeners, who mining is another word, exploration is part of mining, production is part of mining. I would like to, with great respect to those people that know, and there must be a lot of them knowing, addressing to the ones that don't know, exploration and production is a world apart. Exploration that used to be many, many, many years ago, part of a mining company. The big mining company became very big because they got out of the problematic exploration where you have to explore 1,000 property to come up with a discovery. Literally, I am saying that I could support it here, that we have been in Argentina for 23 years, and we have had three major discoveries, one in gold and two in silver. And we have literally reviewed at the desk or by sending a 20 to 25 team exploring early stage, mid stage, and late stage exploration that led to no discovery, no economic discovery. This task of exploring, it's undertaken by the junior companies that are based on a technical report made by a technical engineer, geologist, and puts together a budget. They apply to a listed agency like the stock market and staying in line with the attorney general of the area as well. But we have to decide how much we're going to spend the money on a property. A professional person, which is QP, qualified person, has to sign that the need of discovering and the value is worth the investment. So we raise money compatible with a program. We go back to that property only if the first results that come back say that we should continue on. And the story continues until years later. We go through geochemistry, aeromagnetic. We go through trenching means of digging about a beam meter or so below to see if we can support what we found at surface. And then we go into drilling. And the drilling campaigns, then if successful, they reach the place where Chinchilla reached, where Navidad reached, and where Guacamayo region, which are the three discoveries that in 23 years we have found. Chinchilla currently is at a very exciting point. The exciting point is that the very risky capital needed is risky because there are a million risks to be overcome. Technically, the big company makes a lot of money because of their skill is in digging the what we find out of the ground. And in order to prepare the infrastructure to go and extract our finding takes most of the time billions of dollars. Barrick has got some project where it's going to take $9.5 billion to develop. Pan American has a project that we discovered at Navidad. It's going to take a couple, $2 to $3 billion. Now, this is not the pocketbook of a junior. And the reason why I said initially that there is a huge difference between a junior company, which finds risk money through the exchanges, goes around the world. We are in Argentina for 23 years. We spent millions and millions of dollars on exploration. But when we found it, it had to be the pocket of Pan American, the pocketbook of Yamana, Barrick, and so on. And this is the difference between a senior and a junior. A junior does not understand because it doesn't have the pocketbook to go in production by themselves or the skill. And a big one, big company that is in production don't have and do not develop any other skills about production efficiency, income, shareholders' dividend. That's another world. Our world of junior has reached a level where we're extremely excited that we will be participating with Silver Standard, one of the best and most efficient producer of silver, and put the chinchilla in production. The long stream of the very long stream of risks are now reduced down to the political risks, not much else. Politically, because we have reached it with the filing of the environment report, which I can assure you it was a very comprehensive, was done by an independent agency called Knight PSO, headquartered in London, England, world-class, that they have engineers, they got environmentalists, they got all the people that understand how you take a discovery like chinchilla and having to put in roads or improvement that will take you to the production. We have filed, and I'm very excited about it, looking forward. Everybody would like to be in a position of filing with the mining department an environment, a development strategy, which only requires the permit for exploiting. The permit for exploiting has got a prior wish, is that the mining secretary says, we're going to be looking at giving you the permit to exploit, but let's see your filing of an environment report that says the impact on the community, how it's going to be strategically going through the necessity of compatible with the community, the fears of the Laguna. Everything has got to be accounted for, and we have done that. So that is known as social license. So the social license has been submitted to, and the economic feasibility is being presented to the Mineria for a final permit. These are the two things. There are two great spots to cause for joys being this close. Very few explorationists get to this stage. We have our shareholders are looking forward to now wait for the economic side, which was also expanded with the last report of the 20 drill holes, which was extremely positive, showing a small chinchilla is now a young and growing elephant size. My silence here is that I am in Argentina, following every step, being in the province, being with the community, being with the federal government, making sure I'm like an expecting father being in a hospital and making sure that everything is okay. I am here in Argentina. I've been here for an extensive amount of time, and I'll be here several weeks. All of this is happening. At the same time, what we also recognize, we look in the mirror and we say, who am I? Say, well, we're a lucky company with a project going into production and earnings soon, within 6 months, hopefully, if we close with Silver Standard. And at the same time, we also have a great property portfolio, some of it recently acquired, like we announced a couple of 2 weeks ago, the acquisition of a new project called Antofalla. Because of the length of time that we've been in Argentina and the success that we're having, when we stake a property somewhere, we have a group of other companies that follow and they stake around us. Very happy to say that the latest acquisition, which is Antofalla, we're going to start to explore simultaneously with whatever else is happening, which in Chile, which really Silver Standard are the knowledgeable people which are making the arrangement to start production within the next 6 to 8 months. They are in production now. We simply are going to be supplying more the needed additional minerals to extend their infrastructure of Pirquita, which is the $300 million infrastructure that was shutting down for business. Chinchilla would extend the life of that $300 million asset. Shutting down would be worth zero, continuing on for another 9 years with the supply coming from Chinchilla, which is only 20 miles away from each other. Simultaneously that they're doing all of that on our behalf because they know what they're doing. We're just beneficiary with our shareholders in Golden Arrow. We're continuing our life as explorationists and starting exploration of Antofalla, which is in the same region, northern Argentina, a mere maybe 100, 150 kilometers away. Incredibly, this system is so similar to a new chinchilla, which is incredible. And I must confirm that within days that it was known that we had acquired this project, we got completely fenced in from very large companies. So we've been fenced in. We have the best part, obviously, for the high profile. So recapping what exploration is and how far we can go with risk money, and then how it's got to be transferred into the hands of people that know and have the pocketbook to put it in production. We have done both, completed that task as explorationists and are continuing on assisting Silver Standard or anybody who would come up and want to do it. Put in production chinchilla, which we own 100%. The fact that we also continue our life in exploring very key project that could materialize another major discovery within a very short period of time. The separation between Iberic or Newmont or other major company which are producing and exploration is absolutely huge. And they're not really related to each other until exploration company finds a deposit or a 43-101, which is a mining code for quality standard, much like the code in accounting business. So this is the code assigned to mining.
It's a rare opportunity to listen to someone at this caliber outline the exciting details about your prospects there as well as your operations. The Grasso Group has a remarkable track record and reputation. Our listenership here is very fond of Peter Spina, our top gold stock analyst. So the combination of your eloquent talk with his solid backing, I know will bring so much interest from our listeners today.
I would like to expand in one which has been a more difficult and lengthy time to wait for a new climate in Argentina. For 12 long years, there has been a populist government. The economics and the incentives were foreign words. They didn't understand or they didn't want to understand. Investors were almost a prey to the misguided sheep coming into Argentina and were the object of overtaxation, totally obliterating the economics of being in Argentina. Chris, I'm addressing the great audience, the toils and the wait for 12 long years that this government would bring in investors, and once they were here on hook, they were taxed to death, taxed to bring in money, taxed to repatriate the money, taxed on export that took the total economics and the incentive away. So my presentation and my belief in great geology in Argentina and the opportunity being a country of 750 million square kilometers as the seventh largest country in the world by extension, a country that sits 4,500 kilometers with Chile. Chile is one of the most prolific mining development in the world in the last 100 years, and it fell totally on deaf ears east of Chile, where the border disputes have ruled their relationship very adversely. So Argentina did not concentrate on mining, but concentrated on agriculture, making wine, growing beef, and dancing the tango. That has been a great way of living in Argentina until the economics nearly bankrupted the country through the negligence of the responsibilities of the overtaxing and ignoring investment coming into Argentina. Me living in Canada and looking for funds to be invested in Argentina, the answer was, got a great reputation. I understand you got some fantastic properties, great opportunity, but we like all of that, but we don't like Argentina. After the great wait in 12 years, the government and government philosophy changed. It went the one from populist left and extreme right, and a team in place in the new government, which is highly educated, a team totally dedicated to reverse the trend of Argentina. It was an explosion in enthusiasm when the Secretary of Mine, Mr. Daniel Milan, at the Toronto Convention, where more than 35,000 attendees attend. This is the biggest convention, mining convention in the world. The Secretary of Mine introduced the new philosophy and political decision by the new government, lifting and canceling completely the import of money in the country, export of money, liberalizing all of that, and canceling some of the taxes on export from Argentina of concentrated. And this has reestablished completely the economics and established vastly Argentina as exploration country, the largest exploration country on earth today, with 750,000 square kilometers east of Chile. Chile was so successful in mining that became a part of the North American Trade Association, which was a great honor that the United States and the North American plays it to a South American country, the only one that I know of up to now. Argentina has 3-4 times more geology available with the same type of geology than Chile. But repeating, growing wine and drinking it and eating beef, very good beef, and dancing the tango, it just produces no mines. Produce a no sustainable economy in a country that would be capable of exploiting natural resources. So this was a burst of enthusiasts in March, this past March in Toronto. The next thing that happened, seeing the response was so overwhelming that the Argentinian government asked thousands of business people, mining included, to talk to each other. And the convention took place September 14, 15, and 16 in Buenos Aires, to which I attended as a panelist of the exploration side. It was an enormous success. The workshops were jammed. And this, the get-together face-to-face and let's understand each other, had an enormous success. I was very, very pleased to see that. Argentina now has the respect that it deserves as a prominent destination for natural resources and new discoveries. Chris, this is important to know because the rumor is always, no, no, Argentina. Oh, no, no, Argentina. 12 years of a populist regime, non-caring about the economy, where the economy was going, all paying their debts, should be known that that has been reversed a great time with a great team of policymakers that is creating a new dawn for Argentina. I've been here for 23 years. I never went. I just patiently stood to my ground, and I think that I would be delivering to our shareholders good success, well-deserved for the faith that our investors have put in me, deciding to stay here in Argentina and wait. We'll be paying off. So the payoff time is now. It only needs people that would consider investing in mining that Argentina should be considered. And more at home, and if you permit me, Chris, Golden Arrow should be on the list of being one of the companies to be considered. I'm not a technical person. I'm a businessman which likes to put together elements that lead to making money. Well, if I have to apologize for that, I will, to those who will accept my apology. And I am a businessman that I am coordinating all the elements of a successful mission in Argentina with our companies. The likelihood of delivering success are pretty good right now, and I feel pretty excited about it. It's a good times. I hope that I've also succeeded in explaining to people who basically practice no Argentina, thank you. I feel that at this moment they should say Argentina is now early stage. Buy cheap, sell high. We are in the, at the moment looking for silver. We'll take any value, but silver is a dedication at the moment. We have discovered two projects in Navidad, like the single biggest discovery in the world, and Chinchilla the second. We're looking at Antofalla, which is looks principally for silver as well. We're telling our story. We are bringing a light on an investment to be analyzed and reviewed, and our minds are some should be changed because it's a changing world, and Argentina is being reinvented more positively at the moment. There is a great room for your listener to look at gold and silver as probably the most prominent future gainers on the market today. Argentina has done better than gold during the last year. And the reason is very simple, that your listener will understand. In 1980, the silver to gold ratio was 15 to 1. And today, the ratio of silver to gold is 70 to 1. In fact, to be precise, 69.9 to 1. We need 69 silver ounces to make one of gold. That's totally and abusively incorrect. I think that the ratio will return. We don't need to return it to 15 to 1 for the price of silver to be doubling or tripling. I think that the price of silver could do extremely well if we become again 35 to 1, 30 to 1. In those terms, price of silver could be double the price that it is today to establish the value ratio between the two. In addition, silver has got one more positive over gold, which is a panic currency or metal. Silver has got the advantage that 50% of its production is dedicated to industrial use, an industrial use that it's growing sporadically with the new alternate energy for cars, for many things. So we feel that the ratio and the use of silver will stimulate a silver growth or to be much more important than any other metal, including gold eventually. Gold will go up. Silver will do better for the reason I mentioned. We are also flirting that one day currencies in the world are going to be to have to be supported by values other than just the currency. I feel that we could have a return to gold and or silver back to currencies. Until next time, Chris, and thank you for having me as a guest.
President Carrasa, we just appreciate your time so much. It's such a wonderful education, very entertaining. Give listeners an idea of how successful Golden Resources has been just in 2016. It's a 1,000% increase from trough to peak, from around 15 cents to $1.50. That's a tenfold, roughly, increase for investors. The chart is technically very strong. President Grasso, what a delight hearing your thoughts today. We want to invite you to return to Gold Seek Radio.
Au revoir. The very best. I'd really like to say God bless America and the citizens. We all have challenges in the future. We need to be strong in our determination. We will win again above any matter with the help of God. Thank you. I'm from Argentina. Muchas gracias.
Adios and muchas gracias, señor.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Opening up the digital mailbag. Well, the free service which gave us our hotline they went out of business, so it's no longer free. We do have a new service, though. Plug it right into your phone if you'd like. 1-641-715-3900. Again, that's 641-715-3900. And this time you'll have to enter a 6 digits plus the pound sign to get to our mailbox. That's 514049 and pound. And you can find this at the website. Again, the toll-free number 641-715-3900 and the box number is 514049, and you can log right in. All right, opening up the digital mailbag, Jason says, "Hi, Chris, new subscriber, and I'd like to understand risking no more than 2% on your trades. He'd like to know whether you should risk 2% per trade or 2% of the entire account." Hi, Jason. Everybody has their own risk tolerances. One of the great things about risking no more than 1% on, let's say, 10 trades is that you're never really experiencing more than a 10% drawdown. And this is really important because it really only requires about 11% gain to offset that 10% loss. But as we lose more than 10%, a 50% loss requires a 100% gain just to get back to break even. So most investors, professional investors, never allow their portfolio to risk at any given time of more than 10%. So if you had 5 investments, that's pretty well diversified. You wouldn't want to risk more than 2% on any individual security. And of course, you want to have index diversification among those 5 so that you don't have any overweighting in any particular sector. So you might have a precious metals exposure, an energy exposure, and equities, and of course bonds. And then you want to diversify within each of those whenever possible. So for instance, ticker symbol CEF, the Central Fund of Canada, has a pretty much equal weighting of gold and silver. So you've already got some free diversification lunch within just one symbol. So by not risking more than 2% there, you're actually not risking more than 1% on either of those 2 investments. So there's a lot of ways to look at it, but the key thing is never allow your account to have more than 10% risk at any given moment. And Jason also asks how I like to enter positions and exit them. In thinkorswim conditional option, you have a buy stop to enter a position. So I like the break of a previous weekly high. You can put a sell stop at the bottom of a weekly low. Okay. And this is automatically put in for you. And you can even do a more conditional one that has a third feature. And that is you can split your position into a trailing stop. If your sell stop is never executed, the trailing stop can follow a portion or all of your position up, trailing along the way, never dropping, but always inching higher as the stock or the security makes a advance. Now, that is a bit sophisticated for the everyday investor, the difference it can make for the trader. So for the investor, I don't recommend that third option, just for the weekly trader. And most people would not fall into that designation. You'd really want to be a professional. Why take the risk? You know, a nice diversified portfolio with solid securities, equities, bonds, energy, real estate, and of course, precious metals. That's the way to go. Okay, thanks, Jason. Moving on to Ward in Kashima City, Japan. Wow, we get a lot of callers and email messages from the land of the rising sun. He's a retired businessman and real estate broker and musician and bookseller. He'd like to know how to get a free copy of The Man Who Loved Only Numbers. Of course, that's the fascinating biography of Paul Erdős, the brilliant Hungarian mathematician who lived a very long life and essentially lived nowhere. He just let his mathematician friends, who were very kind, to put him up, and he simply flew all over the world. He was a citizen of the world and escaped tyranny, of course, in Central Europe, and just was a joy to everyone who knew him, who could stand babysitting, I guess you would say, but babysitting a brilliant mind. The Man Who Loved Only Numbers. Also, The Man Who Knew Infinity. I haven't even watched the movie, but I've read the book on the life of Srinivasa Ramanujan at least 3 or 4 times now, and it's just as engaging as The Man Who Loved Only Numbers. And I just so happen to have links to free copies of both, free link to that on Scrib, several links to all kinds of neat books on mathematics and physics, a real page turner. honors, including the life of Galois. Tragic individual, one of the greatest mathematicians that ever existed, passed away at 21 in a duel, sadly. His work, simply because of his rough-and-tumble background, was ignored by most of the cognoscenti at the time, although Fourier and a few other greats did. I think Poincaré as well may have recognized his genius, and sadly was only recognized after his untimely duel. Very humble individual, as his life poured out of him, find the theorems and the lemmas. It's just another neat one, at least the introduction, the first few chapters, I think people would love. There's a few others as well, so I can always send maybe a big compilation of these links, because many of the folks we're going to be hearing from today want those free books. So, Ward, if you haven't already received the links, please send it over to me again at gsr@hughes.net. And Martin asks about more free books. He wants to know about Paul Erdős. I think, Martin, I've sent that to you. And David also asks for books about mathematicians. David, I hope I got that to you. If not, please send it over. Then next up, Daniel, longtime listener and subscriber, asks if I've heard about the ulcer index for entries and exit positions. Daniel, I haven't investigated that. I'm going to look into that today, and I bet our listeners will too after you suggested it. And if you're into Pilates, Daniel has the book for you. Just ask me for the link. Then Phil, all the way from Canada, says he loves gold. Can't believe our guests are saying only buy as much as you feel comfortable with. He says he's comfortable with as much as he can find. Phil, I think you're really echoing the thoughts and the thinking processes of many of our listeners and most of our guests here. Next up, Chris asks about The Man Who Knew Infinity. Couldn't understand the name of the author. Of course, that's the brilliant Brahman from Southern India, Srinivasa Ramanujan, and just a remarkable individual who loved math, and infinity was just one of the things that he knew. Probably the greatest intuitive mathematician of all time, I believe, at least in the tops. Up there, I think, at least as powerful as Gauss, and certainly Leonard Euler, and so many other greats. He just was a rare individual. And, of course, we can thank G.H. Hardy for that great find. And Susan asks how she can sign up for my Alpha Stocks newsletter for $147. That's a one-year subscription without needing a PayPal account. She'd just like to send in a check. Oh, yes, Susan, you can do that if you'd like still, just at 1375 Great Falls Drive, Glenville, North Carolina, 28736. And we'll certainly set you right up. And be sure and include your email address, please, so we can get you set up just right. And then Louie wants another free ebook. Louie, we have those for you. So just send me over a link, and I hope you received them. If you didn't, we'll get one to you. Carl also asks for the free ebooks, and you can be sure we'll send those to you. That's all the Q&A for today. And remember, we now have our phone hotlines. You can reach us anytime you like, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Record, I think it's 3 to 5 minutes. And if you'd like to continue with the recording, we'll splice it all together. You can record till the cows come home. If you like that number again, please jot down 641-715-3900. And the mailbox number, 514049. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I happened to be traveling through Nashville several weeks ago on a project, and of all the days I picked to be in the land of the Grand Ole Opry was the day that the Colonial Gas Pipeline in Alabama was shut down due to a leak in the system. Because of my work that day, I was unaware of this development. However, driving to a dinner engagement, I noticed significant lines of cars backed into the streets, and they were all coming from gas stations. It wasn't just one gas station, it was all of them. It was a literal madhouse. I stopped at one station near a grocery store that was empty. They had orange cones in front of their pumps. The manager explained they were out of gas, and the governor had declared a state of emergency. In fact, governors in six states declared states of emergency in response to the situation. I pulled up the story on my iPhone, and the manager told me before I departed that they would be getting a delayed shipment of gas in after midnight if I wanted to come back when they opened in the morning. I continued on with my meeting that evening and learned the next day that the gas line that ruptured in Alabama was a 36-inch line built in 1963, which is estimated to supply the east coast of the United States with up to 40% of its gasoline supply. More than 700 people worked around the clock to dig up the pipe and plug the leak, which was about 30 miles south of Birmingham, which is where the event occurred. The good news is this situation was remedied in a matter of days. The challenge, and something we all have to think about for future emergencies, is how quickly things can get out of control. Despite requests by the governor of Tennessee to maintain normal gasoline purchasing habits, people were doing no such thing. In fact, people were texting and contacting their friends via social media to let them know where the last few gas stations were that had any gasoline left. Most of these stations were out of gas between 7 and 11 p.m. that evening. It used to be when an emergency hit, supplies at area stores would take 24 to 72 hours to get bought up. Now it appears with texting and social media, that window of opportunity can shorten to a matter of just a few hours. And this was a situation where there was no prolonged crisis. In fact, gasoline was available the very next day. It gives one pause in how to plan for what might be a real emergency or a prolonged emergency. Rethinking how you will respond in a future situation, given the real-time geometric communication afforded by social media, is a metric that must be considered, and your personal plan must be updated to reflect it accordingly. Granted, we cannot prepare for everything, but an awareness of how to respond, given the dynamics and speed of the social media equation, is critical for you and the safety of your family. Chris, I'd like to direct our listeners to visit my website at conquerchange.com and join my new email list. I've been gearing up for some time to release new content and special features which are soon to be around the corner, so please direct your browser to conquerchange.com and sign up today. Updates will follow soon, and until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.